What's up, Internet, and welcome back to the Engadget podcast. I'm senior editor Devendra Hardawar.
I'm reviews editor Sherlyn Lowe.
And joining us today is Nate Ingram from Engadget, our deputy managing editor. How's it going, Nate?
Oh, I can't complain. How are you guys this morning?
I'm okay. Sherlyn is basically in full-on Howard Stern recline mode again. So.
I find y'all far too chirpy.
Yeah, so...
Far too chirpy.
We're getting going. Today we've brought Nate on to talk about Sonos and everything they're doing with their legacy products. They announced this week that some of their oldest products, that are about 10 years old, won't be getting any updates, and... There are also a lot of caveats around that, too. Like, effectively, it's going to be hard for people to use those products moving forward. We'll also chat a bit about Saudi Arabia potentially hacking Jeff Bezos and what that means for cybersecurity and the state of the world that we're living in.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, things are wild.
Very light episode. Very
we're going from dying gadgets to, yeah, insane dictatorships. Yeah, just another episode of the Engadget podcast.
That's one of those headlines that I feel like would not have existed 10 years ago,
yeah,
or even 5 years
ago. There's a lot we're talking about, not just in the show, but in real life that just, yeah. Donald Trump is doing what? Because he's who? Huh? Anyway, as always, if you've been enjoying the show, please subscribe to us on iTunes or your podcatcher of choice. For Podbean users, I've heard that there were some issues with our feed, but apparently it's been fixed now. We yelled at them about that. Spotify has been really weird about updating the show, so I don't know what's up with Spotify. Seriously, folks, Pocket Casts
no,
rules.
No, I'm on Spotify. It makes me sad that I wait a whole day after we get the
Yeah, there's no other way for Sherlyn to listen to the episode rather than sit and wait for Spotify to update.
I end up going to Google Podcasts. You know how sad that is for me to be like going to my second choice podcast?
Just another sad day in Sherlyn's life.
I'd like to shout out to the two reviews that we got on iTunes. I read them. I see them. Be nice or not. It's up to you, but I see them. Hi.
Hi.
Sherlyn isn't always the nicest, though, so, you know, he
wow.
can do what you see fit.
I've been nothing but nice to you, Nate, I think.
I know. It's been a good week.
So, Nate, you are our resident Sonos reporter. You've been to their headquarters quite a bit. You've reported on a lot of all of their new tech, and you hit this bit about them stopping the updates of their legacy products. Can you lay out what the deal is here, what products aren't going to be supported moving forward, and what does this mean for people with these devices?
Yeah, so starting at a high level, Sonos originally, we know them mostly as a speaker maker at this point, but when they got started in the mid-2000s, they made a lot of devices meant for connecting standard non-smart speakers to the internet so they could be grouped together and stream music and that sort of thing. So products like the Sonos Connect Amp, the Sonos Bridge, the Sonos remotes that they used to use for controlling their wireless systems, the Zone Player, which I believe is one of their first official products, and one speaker, the first generation Play 5. As of May, none of those devices will receive new software updates. So what that means is that they will continue to work as they do now, but new features that are added won't work. I suppose if Sonos adds more supported music services, those might not be available. It's not entirely clear what it's going to look like, but the that's kind of the main highlight. And the second thing to know is that because lots of people have multiple Sonos devices in their house, if you have newer devices, let's say a current generation Play 5, the Sonos One that uses Alexa and Google Assistant, any of those newer products, if they're on the same network as part of the same system as your legacy products, those newer products also aren't going to get the new software features, which is potentially, I'd say, a bigger problem.
That doesn't make any sense. So yep. The newer products that should be able to get these updates otherwise will no longer be as long as they're connected to the same network as an older product?
I think it makes sense because of the way Sonos works, right? So what Sonos does is it effectively creates a local network of wireless audio devices, right? So if one thing is slow, then everything has to slow down to that speed. Yeah, it's like if you're on a highway and there's a very slow car in front of you and you can only go at that speed. Yeah, it's not great. That's not great, Nate. And I do think like this is this also follows the news about their recycling mode too, right? Which pissed a lot of people off. We wrote that up. Steve Dent wrote that up for us, and that was a whole thing where they basically enabled this mode that kills your device forever. Recycling mode takes your data off. It does a good thing for data privacy, but it also kills that device, and it means like recycling companies, you can't resell it. It means nobody can reactivate that device. So
it breaks it.
It bricks it completely, irrevocably. There is no coming back from it. And a lot of people have found that to be a pretty unenvironmental thing. But that was announced months ago. And now I think in light of this whole how they're going to be handling updating of older devices, I think it makes a little more sense. But it's still, to me, it's still troubling. Any thoughts on that, Nate?
Yeah, so the explanation they gave for why they're doing the recycling mode is kind of related to what they're saying mm-hmm. about these new updates, right? They're saying that, you know, if you have one of these legacy products in your system, it might bring the whole system's overall performance and features down with it. So I think what they've said to me anyway is something along the lines of like, we don't want someone buying a product the secondhand and having a bad experience with it, mm-hmm. which like I understand to some degree, but we're talking about a very small, relatively speaking, pool of products. And I imagine that anybody out there looking for used Sonos devices that are more than 5 or 10 years old probably knows what they're getting into. I feel like this recycling mode thing just shouldn't be so cut and dried. It shouldn't be, you know, you either brick it forever or you don't get this discount they're promising with it. It's a tough line. And I think that, you know, concern over that is kind of spilling over into this more recent announcement. Mm-hmm. And this is just my perspective was, I feel like there aren't a lot of consumer electronic devices that get software updates for more than 10 years. I know your phones don't, yep. tablets don't, even a lot of computers don't. So that, on one hand, didn't feel unusual to me, but you brought up a good point before we started recording about audio setups and how people used to buy speakers and use them for like their whole life. And, yeah, so those kind of people are probably going to run into some, you know, some concerns. And this is kind of the first time we're really hitting this, I think, where we're talking about some of the oldest smart home devices out there.
This is the first generation of connected devices, basically. Like, so it was before Bluetooth was everywhere. It was before, like, there was no Chromecast. There was no other way to get this thing, to get streaming audio to every room of your house and synchronize them and get all your speakers working nicely and not have to deal with many wires. I will say, like, it's a very specific case. Right. Like the thing about Sonos is I remember when the Sonos speakers started coming up and people were like, oh, man, they sound amazing and I can control them with my phone. And it's all so easy. And a lot of audiophiles and speaker geeks were saying, like, you're spending how much money on something that is essentially, you know, a $200 bookshelf speaker with Wi-Fi built in? Back then, there weren't many other ways to deal with that. So today, most home theater receivers, it's not that hard to find a receiver that has like AirPlay and Bluetooth and Spotify Connect and all that fun stuff. So at home, like I have, you know, a very expensive setup with tower speakers and really nice rear speakers for my home theater.
What a show off.
Yeah. It's a system that costs over $2,000, but those speakers will work forever as long as I'm not dumb and blow them out. Like they plug in with wires and they plug into my amplifier, and my amplifier is like the brain that can be upgraded over time to support new standards and whatnot. But the speakers themselves are like these like nice antiques that can live forever.
So what you just said about upgrading the amp is a really good point, because that's essentially what the majority of what Sonos is saying, the products that are affected here are devices like that. They're just wireless amplifiers that, you know, hook up to the internet and you can stream music to them. So yeah, if you bought one of those wireless amps 10 years ago, it might be time to upgrade mm-hmm. it. I get the concern, but I also feel like it's not realistic to expect that piece of a setup to last forever. I think that it'll be more of a concern in a few years once some of their other speakers start getting discontinued, because then those are really products that like, yeah, you know, like you said, you buy speakers, you can use them for 20 years or longer, 50 years. But some of these Sonos ones eventually are not going to work anymore. The first generation Play 5 is just the first.
Do you
one
remember,
of those.
Does that first gen Play 5, does it even have line out or line in? Like, does it have 3.5 millimeter?
I wish I knew. Okay. I honestly don't
know. I know for certain the Sonos, the Play 1 and the Play 3 have no 3.5 millimeter jack. And longtime listeners of the show will remember how much I love that little jack, because it does everything. But here's the thing. You buy those Sonos speakers, even today, like the lower end, what the Play 1 costs $200. The Play 3 is around $300. These are pricey, expensive things. And if you cannot connect to them wirelessly, as you won't be able to, you know, if you want to take these out of your setup and have newer Sonos speakers, basically all these little things are dead. They're completely dead. You can't do anything with them. So your only choice is to turn on recycle mode, send them to Sonos. You will helpfully get a 30% discount on new equipment if you don't feel completely burned by this whole process. to me, a lot of this also feels like a problem of communication too, right? Because recycling mode came out of nowhere. People were turning it on accidentally too because they didn't quite know what it was. People were trying to buy used Sonos devices and then were hitting this recycling mode that somebody else turned on because they didn't know. They thought they were just clearing out their data. Sonos did not communicate specifically what was going on. And then eventually, you know, the other shoe dropped that, oh yeah, they're killing older devices. So now it all makes sense. But I think people are confused.
I'm still confused. To clarify one thing for me. So when you said that, I mean, the story here is that older devices are not going to get any more software updates, right? How does that, I mean...
They won't, eventually they just won't function.
Eventually. So,
yeah.
How long are we talking about eventually?
We don't, it all depends on Sonos. Like, that's what they're saying.
Right. So for me right now, when I first heard the story, I was like, why is this such a big deal? I was trying to understand. I mean, I get where we're coming from, but I was also like, well, but they're still technically going to work if you're willing to stick to very old standards.
For a while.
They'll work as they have for an indeterminate amount of time, but I imagine if you just have all that old gear, like, it's not going to stop working anytime soon,
right?
Which is good, at least.
But then,
also,
like,
for the record, the original Play 5 looks like has line in and line out.
Okay, so that's nice, because that was a big speaker. That's helpful. Thank you, Nate. I will say, it's a thing, now that they've officially announced these devices are going to die, they'll work for a while, but the thing is, Sonos's app gets updated quite a bit. They add in new features, they add in new stuff, so... I think you could eventually reach the point where even the app won't recognize these older devices, and then you're just completely, completely screwed.
Right now, the way things stand, it doesn't seem like users are going to be that affected for the short term until, for example, your iPhone 6 right now probably doesn't work very well anymore, mm-hmm. even though it technically still does. It's just
and that's not,
getting... not
even that old. That's 4 years old.
And the Play 5 actually shocked me because I was like, oh, wait, that's not that old of a device.
Well, there are multiple generations of it, so there were several things called Play 5. Yeah, this is very first gen. Nate, you kind of hinted at this before. I don't think this is new for Sonos. This has happened to a lot of different companies. I think it's going to happen. Here's our the big idea. Every connected device that you have, anything that connects to the internet, anything that works wirelessly, anything that does something complex with apps, will die eventually. It will lose support. The developers could disappear. We were going down, we're trying to think of fun names for what this could be.
We at first thought this was something like planned obsolescence, but that wasn't really right.
Yeah.
It wasn't planned. They didn't plan this.
More inevitable.
It's the doom of of all gadgets. I don't know.
Thanos, the death of these devices is inevitable.
Yes, a Marvel reference.
Yes.
I think the important thing is, right, it's anything that connects to the internet this is the key thing, because it relies on some other app or service to function. And when that thing stops supporting it, then you're screwed. And it's easy to imagine somebody tricking out their home with lots of smart home stuff that works with Alexa. And then in 10 years, Amazon has sold Alexa because the government forced them to break into 15 different pieces. And the company that inherits them doesn't care. Or who knows, right? We just don't know what's going to be like. But eventually your curtains will stop being able to be controlled, or your lights won't work, or your speakers won't work. And that could be super annoying for people who have invested heavily in these ecosystems. So I think companies are going to have to start thinking about how to communicate, like you mentioned, and what's the upgrade path, or even giving people some sort of guarantee from the start of how long these devices will be supported.
Yeah, I saw some heartbreaking tweets from people who were like, I spent $2,500 on a Sonos home setup, 10 years ago, and now it's essentially, garbage. It's essentially I can send these back and get a 30% discount on the new thing, but in another 10 years or so, those are going to die. And I think here's the big thing. If you look at high-end speakers right now, or decent home theater equipment, if you bought a speaker 10 years ago, it will still work today. It will still sound as good today as it did before. If you bought a speaker 20, 30, even 40 years ago, people are running classic clip speakers with modern amps. Those are basic standards. They just connect over speaker wire, which is a very stable standard that has existed for a very long while. These things just work. This is what we mean by things that just work. We need to talk more about old tech and slow tech eventually, and I think this is the difference.
I think this all speaks to my biggest, most pressing issue with just consumer tech these days is the whole like update cycle, mm-hmm. that whole like forced update cycle. This feels like part of it where it seems like Sonos is just telling you, hey, we don't want you to hang on to those old like first gen speakers. We want you to buy the new ones.
Well, I think their concerns are legitimate.
Yeah,
right?
Sure.
Like, there are all these new standards. There are all these new things. Wireless
standards. And they
can't
keep supporting them. It's true.
Yeah,
I get
completely
that.
Different. Yeah.
But I mean, I'm okay with the kind of like, oh, right, we can't keep supporting something that's 10 years old. But the whole like every 2 years, we're going to mm-hmm. make you upgrade to a new phone.
Yeah.
That thing was old, out of date, sure.
Basically, the Samsung, like, entire
right.
Samsung's entire marketing machine
well,
is.
Apple, too.
Samsung.
You and
more.
Your hatred of Samsung.
Samsung, how many SKUs does Samsung have?
We've had
in
this
one
fight
year,
before.
In 1 year, the Galaxy
how
ma- S.
How
number,
many iPhones are there?
It's just three.
And also, Samsung's not the only company. Samsung's not the only company that does this. Huawei does it too. OnePlus
yeah.
also now does.
Well, I'm saying all these companies are like Samsung will release the Galaxy S20 later this year, mm-hmm. and then 5 months later there'll be the Note 20.
Yeah, Apple
and then there'll
does
be
the
Note Plus,
10,
yeah.
10S, 10S Max, SE.
It's very because those are very clear, and you kind of know what those are. Those all come out at the same time.
I see them as pretty similar, but that's because I hit the cycle
yeah.
that way.
Yeah,
but
yeah, yeah.
Sherlyn,
once again, cannot see the forest for the trees.
Wow, Devendra, I feel like you're always defending or taking a crap on Samsung, as always.
I'm not even Samsung, just Android in general. So this isn't just software as a service, right? It's basically, it's not quite planned obsolescence. We were saying, I think a better thing is like inevitable obsolescence, like Thanos. It is inevitable that these devices
will die. I feel like
we
were playing with like names of what to call this, like mm-hmm. a snappy, punchy name. And like, it's weird. It's like when I think of all the things that fall into this category, I think of like a hardware graveyard. Like all the dead tech that there's
sure.
just bricks right now.
Sure. The island of misfit gadgets.
Mm-hmm.
There's
anything that needs the internet to survive.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Will eventually die.
When you lost connection, you go to that island to die.
The only certain things in life are death and taxes. And the only things certain about connected devices are...
Loss of Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
Is there an app? This reminds me of when we were at CES yes. deciding on the best of CES awards, and every device that we were looking at, Roberto Baldwin, who used to work for us, RIP, mm-hmm. would ask, is there an app? Would it be a brick without the app?
And his main standard for like what's a shitty connected device is, does it rely on an app?
Which is a very good point.
It's a good point. And it's true for everything. And I think it's true for a lot of other things that we've seen die. I remember the Logitech Squeezebox platform.
No idea what that is.
Nobody knows what that is. That was the thing from like the mid-aughts to the like basically 2015 is when they killed it. But it was their solution for wireless music before Bluetooth was big, before like Chromecast was out. Like it involved setting up a server on your PC to stream music to speakers that had like LED screens, and it was a very annoying thing. Like it sounded good, but as a user experience, it was nowhere near as easy to use or as like simple as like Bluetooth or Sonos or anything like that. Also thinking of Pebble and their smartwatches.
That my Pebble was like when they died, I was like, we wrote a eulogy for it. I felt so sad. The Pebble Time Round was actually one of my favorite early smartwatches.
It didn't last that long. Like Pebble's lifespan from like from crowdfunded project to dead was basically 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
I know people with Pebble, gadgets, they didn't just like Pebble didn't just move on. Pebble killed all those devices because the service actually involved running things on a server somewhere.
It wasn't just killing support. It literally was taking things offline.
Kill the devices.
Yeah,
Microsoft's Zunes, effectively.
Ooh.
Yeah. Well, the music service is effectively dead. You're not going to get updates for it anymore. I think the devices still work because they have 3.5 millimeter jacks.
Oh,
I need like a special sound whenever I say 3.5 millimeter jacks. I just want it to like sparkle.
Aww.
I just want it to sparkle because you could just plug in anything and they'll still work.
Say 3.5 millimeter jack.
3.5 millimeter. I'm not talking about Zunes in some abstract way, folks. I loved my Zune, and I had the original, the brown Zune. It was great because back in the day, iPods did not work so well with Windows, and I was strictly a Windows user. So this is, you would agree with me, Sherlyn. iPods and Windows did not work, and iTunes on Windows were bad. So Microsoft was late to the party with Zune, but I think the original Zune was kind of interesting. It was a cool, it looked so different from an iPod.
How long ago was that?
Oh, man. Okay, now I have to go look it up, Sherlyn. God damn it. The first Zune actually launched in November of 2006, so that was well after the iPod. They were slow out the gate there, but I had that thing. I didn't have it initially, but I think I got it around later 2006 or maybe 2007. It was a good little portable media player, and I will say, like, I went through a whole bunch. Like, I went through iRefer devices. I went through a lot of things that were not iPods just because I was a PC user and I needed something else.
Same.
It was this beautiful thing. It was a beautiful piece of art, and I used that thing up until, like, I would say 2012 2013. Like, I used it for a while along with my iPhone. I did eventually go to an iPhone, but I think once iPhones had decent battery life, once smartphones had decent battery life and better media support, then I was like, okay, I might as well just give up on the Zune. You know, the server supporting Zune is dead. All of Microsoft's fitness devices, like, they tried. Microsoft banned, baby.
Sad. Very sad.
Well, now we're all wondering what's going to happen to Fitbit, right? Now the Google is.
Exactly.
I don't think
it's anything's going to happen in short term, but...
No, I mean, I think that's a very good question. I don't think that it's wise at all to end support for any...
Yeah,
nothing's
going to happen to Fitbit because, as we've discussed, Google sucks at launching these things.
What is with the Vindra today? Just throwing attacks at me and my...
Super sassy.
I mean, I'm just saying the truth.
I remember this thing. I don't know if we count this, but Firefox OS as a platform for phones.
Yeah, they never launched. They never launched, but it was a cool idea.
I might have been confused by having seen them at too many events now, but I thought that they maybe had launched. But maybe I was just so intrigued by the
idea.
It
was a cool idea. It was a cool idea for an open source phone OS.
I think gaming also, right? Games lose their online support. Some
it's
games,
true.
I mean, you
games
can't play them
entirely,
at all anymore.
Like,
eventually, your consoles will stop connecting and being able to download updates.
It's not just MMOs anymore. Yeah. I remember when, like, Enter the Matrix, the game, died, which was, like, that was a really interesting connected experience on, you know, earlier consoles. It wasn't even, like, modern devices, but it died and you could do nothing with that disc. So, Nate, I know you have to run and, like, continue running the site and everything. Any major takeaways from all of this?
I mean, what you were saying about having two great speakers hooked up to an amp that you can replace as needed as features get added you're interested in feels like the smartest thing that you can do if you're really into audio.
Yes.
And I think that, like, more broadly, I think you need to think about devices. Does it really need this connectivity? Is it going to make your life better? Is it worth the trade-off for this inevitable obsolescence? That's kind of like, I think we all need to start thinking about our purchases in a more measured way like that.
I mean, I think that's the takeaway for us. I just wonder if, like, what the message for companies then should be. Should they all be, like, thinking, how far out should they be thinking when they make their new products?
I do think, like, they need to think a little harder about how they do this stuff. But I will say, look at what survived.
Communicated earlier.
Right. Look at the things that survived. And those are things that rely on standards, not proprietary software like Sonos's, you know, wireless. Like, anything on Bluetooth will continue working for a while. Anything, even like, I would dare to say Chromecast is a standard, but it's an open thing, like Chromecast audio, like for broadcasting audio. It's pretty, like, any company can use it. It's not closed off like Sonos. So I think closed standards are bad because they will kill your devices.
100%.
Yeah. And connect.
Send them to the obsolescence graveyard.
Yes. Thank you so much, Nate.
Thank you, guys.
I think just following up on what I was saying about standards and kind of how everything works, like, this is what Sonos is doing. It's a broader story about the smart home and kind of what made smart homes fail to launch for so long. Like, we saw all these different standards at CES. People were using different things. Nothing talked to each other. And now there is what was that?
Oh, the new standard that Amazon and Google,
PChoip.
Your favorite, PChoip.
And now there's PChoip, which could save the day. But, you know, think of all those old smart home devices, all those light bulbs, all those things that relied on specific apps, like...
Or hubs.
Well, even light bulbs. Like, light bulbs could still work as light bulbs, but you wouldn't get all the fun LED features if the app stopped working. Just a quick update. In a statement released last night, the Sonos CEO, Patrick Spence, said, "We heard you. We did not get this right from the start." He assured customers that the older Sonos devices will continue working after May. They're not going to be bricking them, and he really just wanted to make that clear. But he also added that Sonos will actually be looking into doing bug fixes and security patches for those devices for as long as possible. And additionally, he added that Sonos is going to work in a way to let older products that aren't getting normal updates and newer devices work together in a single network. And honestly, that's probably how it should have been from the start. He says more details will be coming in the next few weeks. While that doesn't fix all the problems we've been talking about, it's at least a big start, and it shows that consumers complaining about these things and vocalizing their rights kind of leads to some sort of solution, even if it's going to be temporary. I guess, Sherlyn, tell us, this feels like it's all part of the smart home franchise you've been working on.
Yeah, so we did get up our smart home franchise finally this week. Basically, a franchise for us is a package of stories that are related to a theme. And so we've been working on the smart home theme package for a while now. And yeah, for me, my story was about how I turned my tiny rental apartment into a smart home, because like it's challenging when you rent, right? You have landlords that are in the way. You have, there's so many rules that you have to stick to or watch out for. But like just kind of to go back to what we were talking about just a little bit. Yes, PChoip. I can't believe that you said PChoip will save the day, but it might. I think that open standards are important. But the thing is that like the trouble is companies are so eager to beat each other to the punch that they want to come up with something first. They want to be the first to do something. And they don't care if it's proprietary or not. They don't care really about the user experience.
They don't care if it works. They don't care if it'll break.
Right. That's really annoying. Yeah. That's deeply annoying. And I think, though, like I've been surprised in trying to turn my apartment into a smart home that like some of my older light bulbs actually work with like Google Home, the app itself. So there are some companies that feel like they're doing this thoughtfully. I'm not going to say that Google is, just because like it might be, but I don't know that. Like, I
think Google had
to
support a lot of the early standards just so they don't leave anything out. And also because they didn't have that many third-party devices at first.
Right,
so
like, as compared
to
Amazon.
It was up to them. Yeah, it was up to Google to like say, okay, we're going to just work with as many things as we can, which is, good for them.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, that was my thing. I think that companies need to think about a grander plan and think more about the customer than trying to be first and beat the competition. I mean, I see the value in that, but back to our smart home franchise, though, we have a bunch of stories coming up this week. We already got, you know, Nate himself actually wrote the best smart speakers roundup. Hopefully there will be no Sonos.
No, there will be Sonos, because here's the thing. They're
good.
Still good speakers.
They're good.
It's just now you know the value proposition. Like within 10 years, if your Sonos does not have a 3.5 millimeter jack, like it may be dead and you'll just have to upgrade.
You said 3.5 mm. I'm sorry. I had to. Anyhow, if you've been thinking about getting your own home all smartened up, check out our package. It's running all week on the website. Go to Engadget.com.
Now let's move on to another big story in the tech world this week. And that is the report from The Guardian that Saudi Arabia hacked Jeff Bezos's smartphone using WhatsApp.
Oy.
They hacked his iPhone X. This is the wildest story, or at least one of the wildest stories I've heard in the tech world for a while, because it brings in a lot of topics we've been talking about, like cybersecurity and the need for better management of cybersecurity tools, and also like, you know, Jeff Bezos and like the sheer amount of power this guy has. Jeff Bezos is walking around with an iPhone just running WhatsApp. And apparently,
is it an iPhone? Are you sure it's an iPhone?
It's an iPhone 10.
Okay.
Yeah. Also, if you had read the materials, Sherlyn, you would.
Oh shoot. Okay. Well, here's the thing. I suspect that the exploit was because maybe Bezos, my best friend, backed up his chats to Google Drive, because I feel like that's the one vulnerability on WhatsApp. But who knows?
No. Don't.
I'm speculating.
Don't speculate. When we know what we know specifically what it is,
okay.
It's written down.
Well, then you go.
Just like, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. You didn't do the reading, Sherlyn. This is college
not.
And you did not do the reading.
I
so
did not. Didn't want to look at something.
This is how Sherlyn survived college.
That's true. Coasted on
just
my good
asking
looks.
Questions.
Coasted on my
but
looks.
Is it really? So Sherlyn clearly didn't do the reading today, but I did. So we could talk about a couple things here. This all started with Jeff Bezos and the Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, aka MBS, texting together on WhatsApp. They're just bros. They're just super rich bros texting about, you know,
which
life,
Rolls Royce to get, which horse they want to go bareback
work
riding
is hard.
On, you know. That's the sort of stuff.
Really, what did they talk about? But apparently, at some point in 2018, Jeff Bezos received an unsolicited video message over WhatsApp from this account.
I wonder what that could be, like what the video could be.
Yeah, it's a lot of things.
I don't want to know.
But what's interesting is that, first of all, this came through the Saudi Crown Prince's WhatsApp account. So it's unclear if like he was directly involved because, you know, he has people. He has people who handle all of these things, too. So like it could have been the folks from his security service, too, who have been tied to a lot of surveillance and a lot of issues around critics of the Saudi government. What is interesting here, too, because I've read the technical breakdown of the hack from the security firm that kind of reviewed all this. WhatsApp is a really interesting attack vector because the files get downloaded automatically to your phone. You don't have to like hit accept. They just come straight in.
That's only if you have it turned on. Like, there's a setting in WhatsApp that allows you to turn it off. I turn it off for my family because my mom's always forwarding dumb Facebook videos to me. So I disable that.
Apparently Jeff Bezos.
Not for Jeff Bezos.
Did not. And the malware, so the forensic analysis of the malware in that video file is likely related to Pegasus 3, which is a spyware developed by the Israeli intelligence firm NSO, which is kind of ironic that Saudi Arabia is using that. There's a lot of stuff happening here. So once that spyware hit his phone, it just started spitting out data, like tons and tons of data. It started slow, and then it ranked up to being gigabytes of data. It was on his phone for over a year. Like, this was a pretty big, long attack
by
the Saudi
government.
And
it's been quite a year for Bezos. Hasn't there been a lot of stuff that, like, wouldn't you like to get an inside look?
Interesting you'd mention that, Sherlyn, because it almost seems like a lot of this is tied. First of all, Jeff Bezos is not just the richest man in the world. He's not just the CEO of Amazon. Mm-hmm. He also owns the Washington Post. Mm-hmm. And the Washington Post has been highly critical of the Saudi government. And 6 months after this attack started, the Washington Post journalist Jamal Khashoggi was killed in the Saudi consulate. And this was a wild story because for a while, Saudi Arabia completely denied it. And then eventually, like once there was a ton of evidence and security cam footage of like just a really horrific thing, like go read on that because it is something straight out of the Bourne Identity. They said it was rogue intelligence agents who were involved in that killing. But in actuality, there's really good evidence that points to like this all starting from the information taken from Jeff Bezos's phone. And it's not just that, too. You might remember the whole tabloid spectacle of Jeff Bezos's marital affair. I don't know. Was it technically affair? I think it was just a relationship with a journalist. And
I think the wording is mistress that people are using. Lauren Sanchez, the former television anchor.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't think that was anything that he wanted to come to light anyway.
Not really. And this is, it's wild too, because then after they were leaking the data, then the MBS account sent Bezos like a meme.
Oy.
That was like, don't you hate it when women are like this?
Oy.
And the woman in the meme looked just like Lauren Sanchez. And it was like, dude, bruh, what are you saying here?
Yeah, he was probably baiting Bezos.
They were definitely baiting him. And then there was another message later being like, oh, no, it's not us. Don't listen to those stories about Saudi Arabia. This is a whole thing. It's kind of wild. And it kind of all, so the Guardian story goes up. Everyone kind of freaks out too, because it's weird to say, because Saudi Arabia has already been implicated in the murder of a journalist, and a horrific murder of a journalist. And MBS has also been tied to that. They're denying that he's directly involved. But now, straight up, they've hacked Jeff Bezos. And there are a lot of good think pieces about this, because it's like, if Jeff Bezos is not safe, how can anybody be safe?
Right, right. He's basically not only one of the most powerful men in tech, he's also the richest guy in the world. And
you'd also think that he'd have better security services than just like straight up using WhatsApp.
But I also think that when you're that big, you have like that much larger of a target on your back.
No, definitely. Like, so first of all, these attacks can hit anybody, basically. Like, even
exactly,
he's not safe, but most of us aren't big enough targets for
exactly
this.
Exactly.
But
I'm not a target at all, but I refuse to. Well, I'm not as big a target as he is in any near way. But I'm also paranoid about my security. And it's surprising that he's not been.
Well, he has a whole security firm.
Right.
Like, he's super paranoid, but.
But apparently, WhatsApp with MBS, you know? So.
Yeah. He WhatsApp. I mean, listen, sometimes you gotta chill with dictators. Sometimes you just gotta. You got to keep your business going. So yesterday, Jeff Bezos subtweeted the Saudi government when he posted a photo of him on Twitter at Jamal Khashoggi's memorial. If your net worth could be a nation's GDP, you basically unlock the ability to subtweet an entire country. I really can't wait until Bezos and Zuckerberg are just subtweeting and sub-messaging each other. Like that is the future world war. It's world war social. It's going to be messy.
It just reminds me too much of Trump's tweets. So.
Yep. So, of course, this is a developing story, and we'll be covering, you know, whatever details emerge down the line. But it's pretty wild. And I think it speaks to the state of cybersecurity today and the importance of not just people in power, but everybody being very, very concerned about their security and also the sheer power of these hacks and of the capabilities of this sort of spyware. Like, this is high level stuff.
Absolutely. There's like super enterprising people out there, very intelligent, skilled people just working on how to crack security mm-hmm. flaws and get whatever. So basically the moral of the story is just be extremely paranoid.
Well, it's also the moral is you really can't do much. If you're being targeted by the Saudi government, you're going to get got.
Just take the blow.
Yeah. But I will point to, I had a great interview with Alex Gibney, the documentary director, about his Stuxnet film several years ago. It was a while ago now. But he made a really great point where the power of these cyber hacking tools is getting to the point where they can destabilize governments. Mm-hmm. They can attack very powerful people. It is basically the power of nuclear weapons, like the sheer amount of capabilities that a hack like this could accomplish. So he is pushing, and a lot of people are pushing, for the idea of basically treating extremely powerful hacks like this as like nuclear weapons. Like something that should be contained, something that should be outlawed in certain ways. Mm-hmm. I think it makes a lot of sense after this attack. So let's wind down a bit from that tale of corporate espionage. And it's just crazy stuff. I want to shout out a couple of things. Over the past week, I've been testing out AMD's new Radeon GPU, the RX 5600 XT. And this thing's pretty cool. It is going to be selling for around $280. It's going to get you 1080p gaming speeds beyond 60 FPS. So it's like 90 FPS and above, which is really good for competitive gamers and people who have 1080p monitors. So I really liked it. I think it's a really great deal. So go check out my review of that. I'm also working on some coverage around the third season of Cosmos. So I've already chatted with Anne Droyan, who co-created that show and was Carl Sagan's wife. She's also responsible for, you know, the Golden Records for the Voyager project. So she is a very schooled person, and maybe we'll get some other interviews in too, but hope to get that coverage out to you guys soon. What have you been working on, Trillin?
Well, by the time you're listening to this podcast, my HP Elite Dragonfly review will be up, which is also nice to note that both Devendra and I are using HP laptops at the recording today. I'm also working on some art and Sundance-related coverage. I've taken some demos, but it's really difficult for us to kind of like cover Sundance remotely, and it's not like we can be there right after CES. So
it is. I would love to go to Sundance, but come to this tiny mountainside, very cold village and fight through crowds and lines to see. I would love to see the movies, but I have no will left in me after CES.
Yeah, so we're going to figure out how we cover Sundance from remote. But there's been some interesting projects that, you will see on the site soon.
We typically cover the VR and interactive stuff. So I think more Tribeca, which is in April. Like, we really go hard on that because it's local. And there's a lot of cool stuff there, too.
Also a Devendra and Sherlyn tag team.
Tag team.
You know that's going to be a fun one.
It's going to be fun. Maybe we can podcast from there.
We might.
So, Sherlyn, what has been giving you life? Because apparently, as we've been recording this, Sherlyn is just like creeping lower and lower to the ground. So she is basically a corpse right now.
I am. And I don't know if my pick is actually giving me life or the thing that's sapping my life juice from me. Everybody who listens to this podcast and listens to me in any way knows I just got a Switch. And I think it's been keeping me up at night because I play too late, maybe. I don't know. So my recommendation, now that I'm a true Switch gamer.
Everything every person with a console did like during grade school and high school, but Trillin is getting to it a little late. So it's a problem.
I'm not planned obsolescence. I'm suspended adolescence. So there you go.
Arrested development.
Thank you. Yeah. That's a better.
That's the actual
That's exactly me. Yeah. But anyhow, speaking of arrested development, the game that has lately tickled my fancies, I guess, is Pokemon Mystery Dungeon Team Rescue, which is
why Mystery Dungeon. There's a real Pokemon game.
I know, but well, they don't have demos on for those games, and I just played the demo of Mystery Dungeon because I know it's kind of janky, but
it's
adorable.
Funny, Sherlyn, how you got the Switch and you're not even switching right. You're not.
Listen, I beat all of Overcooked
2.
There's
a real Pokemon game right there.
I also four-starred some of the levels in Overcooked 2, which is incredibly difficult to do, just so you know. But yeah, no, Pokemon Mystery Dungeon. It's just funny.
Okay.
It's these Pokemon, you can name your Pokemon. So I have a Pikachu and a Chikorita. And they are teammates in this rescue squad that goes around like helping out, you know, Pokemon in danger. And they're adorable. They talk to each other like kind of like their boyfriend and girlfriend, but not. And it's really awkward because my Chikorita woke up one morning and her boyfriend Pikachu is just waiting outside a door asleep. Just like he's passed out in front of her door. And I'm like, that's the boyfriend I want. It's a lot of fun. The full game won't be out for a while, but play the demo if you want. It's, again, janky. It reminds me of the Game Boy version of the game where I had to like scout Victory Road or something.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, that's my pick. How about you, Dev? Well, what's giving you life?
I've been checking out Little America, which is the new Apple TV Plus show from Kumail Nanjiani and Emily Gordon. It is basically about the immigrant experience of America. And I think it's a beautiful thing to see. This is a thing that kind of just hits me really hard emotionally, too, because it's like the world is kind of divided right now. It is a little hard to see how an immigrant like myself can exist in this country when, like, straight up our president does what he does and inspires such vitriol from his followers. So it's sort of like High Maintenance, which is a great show that's about like the essence of life and does kind of tie into immigrant stories sometimes. But yeah, straight up about immigrants and like about the side of America that you don't normally get to see. Like, I love High Maintenance, but it is very much like, this is Brooklyn today. And it's a very multicultural Brooklyn, but it's a very specific slice of America that's not the same as like the rest of the country. Mm-hmm. I love seeing stories like when I go down to, you know, Georgia and Atlanta to visit my family, there are entire towns and cities that are just filled with immigrants. And it's kind of fun to see. Like, there's towns where it's like, it's a straight up, there's a Korean barbecue joint on every single block. And that speaks to like who's moved there and who's living there. There are small suburbs that are entirely Indian immigrants in Georgia. Like, to me, that's the story of America. America is a country made of immigrants. So it's all pretty uplifting. I think it's worth checking out.
And that's it for the show today, everybody. Thank you as always for listening. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our very own managing editor, Terrence O'Brien. The podcast is produced by Ben Elman. You can find Devendra online at
Devendra on Twitter, and I podcast about movies and TV at slashfilm.com. Check out the Slash Film cast there.
If you want to give me better names for my Pokemon, I'm at Sherlyn Lowe on Twitter.
I don't think we can do better than what you've got.
I think I got pretty good ones. Email us your thoughts and feedback at podcast@engadget.com. Leave us a review on iTunes and subscribe on anything that gets podcasts. There might be a delay on Spotify, but if that's a problem, you complain to them about it.
Or just use a real podcast.
No, I like Spotify. Anyway, come back next week for a fresh new episode.
By the way, I had to Bing Zune, which
Bing?
Is... What the hell?
Bing?
What the hell, Microsoft?
Bing?
Because I'm on edge right now, so...
Yeah, you're on edge.
I had to Bing Zune to learn about Skype. I don't know.
Oh,
stupid
Lord.
Microsoft names.